we're up against a lot of things here. I mean, even if you look back at, you know, why do we care scientifically, it really mattered what people thought of us because it meant our survival, right? If we weren't popular in a group or a crowd and we didn't go and gather or hunt with this group and we were on our own, so we literally wouldn't survive. Hello and welcome to Spiritually Hungry.
Good afternoon.
So, Michael, how important is it to you what other people think of you?
How important do you think it is to me?
And were you always that way?
Well, first, I want you to answer the first question.
Other people's opinions of you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't care.
Yes. I've made it, it's interesting because that's where our topic is today. And I was thinking about it. This is probably, it's hard to say the most important, but maybe it's certainly amongst the most important aspects of life that we need to work on. That there's two ways, and we'll get more deeply into this, but really, of course, there's two ways to live life. And most of us are in the spectrum. On one hand is not caring at all, meaning what people think about us, not how we treat others, of course, right? We're talking about just how we react to people's feelings, thoughts, words about us. On the one side of the spectrum is not caring at all. And the other one is caring completely. And most people are on the spectrum. If I had to guess, I would say most of the world, it leans closer towards the side of caring a lot about what people are thinking, saying, possibly thinking, saying. And
well, do you think anybody's really immune to not caring? I mean, when you say those that other group of people who don't care at all, I'm not sure that's coming from like...
No, there might be. Exactly. To be clear, right? There are people who are psychopaths or narcissists.
No, but even, yeah.
Yeah, of course. That is, I would hope and assume it's a small minority.
Or just big ego. Like, I don't know if you have to label it as a disorder.
But by the way, I have found that even people with big egos, and they behave as if that nobody else exists, at the end of the day, they very much care.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So that attitude of, oh, I don't really care, usually is masking a care.
Right, okay, so to be clear, we have to be, what I'm talking about is the deeply spiritual state where the individual is so desiring to accomplish what their soul came into this world to accomplish that it pushes aside all other thoughts and fears and doubts, right? So that's one of the ways to know, again, and I'm assuming most of our listeners are not egomaniacs, psychopaths, or narcissists, or at least not in the extreme, right? But that
you insulted a whole bunch of people.
I don't mind. Well, actually, they don't care what I was going to say. I also don't mind. But of course, we're talking about to the normal center, we'll call it, and I would hope and assume most, if not all, of our listeners, where we do care, and to realize that this work that we're going to talk about today, which is about diminishing how much we actually care about what others think about us and say about us.
Well, do you care what I think about you?
I do, because I know that for the most part, you're interested in both my benefit and my soul's purpose in this world. So of course—
For the most part, where are we going with that?
Well, every once in a while, I'm sure, an eye towards you, because we also, besides our spiritual relationship, we also have a personal relationship. And therefore, yes, there are going to be times that I annoy you or you annoy me. And then our interactions then are not from a place of pure care for the other, right? I mean, I'm not saying anything.
I didn't know that this annoying part is a new piece.
Really, I never annoy you, ever.
Yeah, that part. I didn't know if it the other way around.
Did you annoy me? Almost never. Where was I?
I'm not sure. Now you've insulted me along with the narcissist and the
really?
Sociopath.
That's the way this is coming across? I hope not. So, of course, you should have a small group of friends, family that you trust, of course. And it's not so much that I care what you think about me, but that I trust what you see about me, right? So that if you tell me, you know, your behavior towards that person was not as it should be, it's not that, oh my God, Monica thinks less of me now, and that's why I care.
Yeah, like I'm not judging you. Or like what you said to me before we were walking down the stairs
a few minutes ago.
You had an opinion. I didn't agree with.
Right. But I hope you know, usually it's coming from a place of care for you, not a judgment of you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think we're leaning towards the podcast, which I'm completely open to. But back to
the topic at hand.
I know that one of the most important parts of my work, your work, and our listeners' work in order to actually live the life that we're meant to live is to be constantly doing the difficult, hard work to diminish in our own mind our care about what others are thinking about us and saying about us and doing.
Well, it's interesting because not too long ago, Abigail and I were in London and we went to go see the Royal Opera House. And Abigail asked an interesting question. She said, why are the seats positioned as they were? Because they were faced kind of like at an angle, which you'd have to kind of turn to look at the stage. We were on a tour and the woman said, you know, everybody wanted to be seen. It was really important that you dressed a certain way, you looked a certain way. And so we're up against a lot of things here. I mean, even if you look back at, you know, why do we care scientifically, it really mattered what people thought of us because it meant our survival, right? If we weren't popular in a group or a crowd and we didn't go and gather or hunt with this group and we were on our own, so we literally wouldn't survive. And so today, obviously, we've evolved.
And I would add to that, that it's not just, and it's true, the evolutionary purpose or cause for our care what other people
think. For our basic survival, yeah.
But that there's also a spiritual element here. That it is, and we know each one of us came into this world with a battle to fight. Mm-hmm. And in order to fight a battle, you have to have an opponent. And part of our opponent, internal opponent, which is not us, but an opponent that exists within our mind, within our life, is to keep reminding you, no, you should care. No, you should care. No, you should care. So in a static state, meaning if a person is not battling that internal voice, that's a voice that is there pushing you all the time to actually increase your care about what others think about you. So it's
well, it feels like an ego death, right? If we don't have approval from people. Also, lack of approval feels like lack of access. You know, if people don't like me, I'm going to have less opportunity. I'll have less success. I'll have less exposure. Well, you can fill in the blank, right? So a lot of these things, and to your point, yes, spiritually, that is the reason why you need this so that you have free will to choose something else, right? To really tap into the purpose of your soul or existence. But on a day-to-day basis, it feels very real and very important, I would say.
Right.
It's interesting. Actually, there's a disorder called allodoxophobia, which is when others' approval becomes a debilitating fear. Do you know there's a word for this?
What is the word again?
Allodoxophobia.
That's interesting.
I thought it was.
But I would say most people, though, are on the spectrum of that too, right?
I mean, if there's a name for it, yeah. Right?
No, I'm saying I think most people, and I would ask our listeners to be honest with themselves and really ask that internal question, how much do I care?
Yeah.
Right? How often do I care?
Exactly.
Today, how many moments, how many minutes, hours, days have I spent caring? Worry.
And if you answer that question honestly, at least you're at the beginning of really addressing this, right? Because most people are
getting
like,
out of your allodoxophobia.
Most people are like, "Oh, I don't really care." You know, I don't care. But it's
really
coming
you've
from
met people.
No, but it's not real. It's like it's not real. It's just a defense mechanism. But for those of our listeners who don't think still that they care about others' opinions, maybe there's an area that they're overlooking. So I want to see if anybody can relate to these examples. You're constantly replaying situations in your mind, searching for mistakes, worrying about sounding foolish. Actually, when I was writing these down, I put a name to each person because I was like, this just came
really?
To mind.
Can I see the names?
No.
Okay.
When you hear someone say something negative about you, you dwell on it, even if you know it's not true. That's a big one. Do you go to great lengths to avoid disapproval? Are you afraid to ask for what you want? Which is related to a concept I speak about, which is the shame of wanting.
Interesting. And also related to that, though it's tangentially related, is that when somebody says a word in a sentence you don't understand, do you stop them and say, what does that mean? Right? Because of course I would do the right thing, right? Because don't you want to learn a word you didn't know? But of course, oh my God, I'm going to look like an idiot, you know.
I often ask if I don't know.
Yeah, I try to ask.
Or when they walk away, Google it.
Well, while they're there.
Oh, yeah, right. You're worried if we ask for what we want, we might be rejected or judged for it. So that's connected to the shame of wanting. And the last one is, are you worried you won't be accepted or loved if anyone knew something about you that you didn't want them to know?
Are you worried about it? Because I'm sure all of us have something that we wouldn't want others to know.
Yes, but the worrying and this and the going to, what great lengths do you go to try? So these are the ways that you might not think, oh, I don't care what people think, but do any of these things pop up for you in your day to day? And I think for all of us, to some extent, it does. And that's where it really gets us, because when you start to care and think in this way, you stop doing what you want to do, or actually you lose sight of what that is because you no longer hear your own opinion or your own voice.
Which is a very important, I think maybe for me, foundational reason why this is so important. We have a limited amount of energy, mental energy, physical energy. And every ounce of energy that is used for external purposes, what people are thinking, saying, doing, potentially thinking about me, is energy stolen from your ability to manifest your potential in the world. So it's what we're talking about.
And simply,
here,
that's the wrong thought versus the right thought, right?
And this, my point is, a wrong thought steals a right thought. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if, oh, you know, what's the big deal? Yeah, of course, you know, a listener can say, I'd like to develop this ability to care less, but what is it actually harming me today? Well, what we're saying is that actually it is. It is, because there's a thought you're supposed to have today. An amazing thought about yourself, about something you're supposed to do, but you spent 5 minutes and five calories of brain energy thinking about what that person might have said about you, right? That energy was actually meant to be the one used, the energy used for that amazing thought that you needed and wanted. Now it's not going to come to you. So
it's not only a distraction, but it's a thief.
It's a thief. And hopefully now it's a fear. I know fear is not an option, like Monica's great book
says. Some fears are healthy, though.
This is a good fear, which is to know that because I think often people are motivated, a lot of people motivated, I want to become a better person. Nice, beautiful. But the reality is most people are motivated, can be motivated by a healthy fear. And this, what I'm presenting, I think, to our listeners is to create this healthy fear, to know that the external thoughts are going to be about other people. Everything we've spoken about until now is, like you said beautifully, a thief. And when you think in that way, the next time you're about to go down that rabbit hole of ruminating over something silly you did and now people might be thinking and saying about you, stop and say, one second, if I spend the next 20 minutes, half hour, an hour in this thought process, I'm going to be stealing from amazing thoughts that I'm meant to have about myself, about things that are important to me, about my life. It is a zero-sum game. So I think part of the path to transforming from external thoughts and worries to internal, that we call the soul, the real essence of you, and being able to put energy in that direction, is the understanding that it is a zero-sum game. The more time you spend, and every moment you spend thinking about what people are thinking of me, takes away your ability to think about ways that your soul wants to manifest, things that your essence truly wants to become revealed in this world.
So just to bring this back to our listeners and make it practical for them, it's a good time to just consider how much of your day is spent in the wrong thought, a thought that doesn't support you, the what ifs, right? Because they creep up on us, like, what if they don't like me? What if they don't respect me? What if I'm not supported, right? Those what ifs kind of lead us. We don't think it's the wrong thought necessarily, but just by starting down this line of thinking leads you eventually to the wrong thought. And I think about children a lot. You know, I love pretty much all children. And part of what I love about them is their curiosity.
I just had a completely non-sequitur thought. Do you want me to share it?
Maybe.
You know, there's that philosophical question. You know, if you had a time machine and met baby Hitler, would you kill him?
Yeah, I know.
That's when you said you love all children. I was just thinking, would you love baby Hitler?
Almost all children. But they're curious and they're simple and they have certainty. You know, it's like this, the whimsy in which they kind of like navigate, it just is so beautiful. And we all start there, right? We all are like that. And then at some point we get into this other part that's completely not connected to that. And we, as we get older, we kind of displace that. We lose our certainty. We lose our sense of self.
It's funny because I've been thinking about this lately, right? This idea that, it's just something personally for me. Like in the past few days, I'm really thinking like people, as they get older, you know, older can be 25, 30, like they think, again, they think the world has to see me in a certain way. And I've been thinking lately, I want to be as silly as possible in life.
Huh.
Right. I think it's a very positive way forward. Of course, the important things in my life and the important, but as a general rule, as much silliness as I can have.
What would that look like?
I think I do it relatively often.
No, I know.
Kids.
What would that look like in public?
Oh, it doesn't have. I'm not saying this necessarily. I don't have to make a fool. I'm not necessarily saying I need to make a fool of myself.
I got concerned for a second.
No, by the way, I have to. I think I might have shared this, but years ago, maybe 25 years ago, I was speaking to a friend who was also beginning his journey in the spiritual study and work, and we thought it would be a good idea to spend one day a week where we just make yourself look like an idiot, right? Because that's ego work, sort of separate.
Are you going to do that?
It's not a bad idea. I'm not sure. I'm not saying I would never do that. But my point is...
So interesting. I'm going to have a new husband.
Really? This is surprising to you?
No, you're silly in our house.
Right.
But that person is very often different than what most people experience of you.
True. True. But my point is, exactly, I don't ever want to take myself too seriously. Uh-huh. I think is the point. And I think it is important to
Well, you're really great at that. When I'm taking something very seriously, you're straight... default emotion is I'm going to be silly, and it does lighten everything up.
Yeah. Sorry.
So what I was going to say is that we want to reawaken our most important relationship, which is that with our source, but with ourselves, our true essence. I often quote this song, Trampled by Turtles, called Alone. They sing
Come
it.
Come into this world.
Oh, go ahead.
Alone.
And in the end, how does it go? It says, you come into this world alone, you go out alone. And your father, the Rav, would often say, you come into this world naked, you leave naked, and all that remains is the goodness you have done. And I love that quote so much because you can't argue with that. There's no kind of like, yeah, but what? It's really kind of very simply put that, right? And if you keep that in mind, just even as a quote, like to put somewhere, and you look at it every day, you're going to have a hard time kind of like taking all this other noise very seriously.
Well, which is exactly, there's actually an ancient Kabbalistic meditation for this, which is anytime you find yourself overwhelmed by, you know, what others are thinking about you, imagine literally, and I've done this, imagine yourself dead. Either lying in a casket or dead in a bed or no longer in this physical world or a soul separate, and ask yourself, is all this, going to matter to me in that state? And of course, the answer is 99.9%. Couldn't care less.
Far out. I can't even. So you're thinking about something somebody said to you or about you.
Yeah.
And then you envision yourself
dead
as a doorknob. And is that going to matter?
Does it matter? Meaning, assuming, right, we believe that
the soul
exists.
It doesn't matter, but then there's all.
You're now a soul.
And then there's all kinds of other things to think about.
That really wasn't the point of this meditation. But right. Of course,
you start thinking about death and all the other things. Yeah,
I find death as
a supportive.
I don't know. I personally can tell you from experience, I have found this to be a very positive
practice. I'll try it maybe at some point. I'll let you know how it goes for me.
Well, let me put it this way. For sure, when you're in that state of experiencing what life is like or what existence is like, like a soul detached from the body no longer existing, you won't care.
Well, to the point of, I think what you're trying to say is that...
No, that's exactly what I wanted to say.
But when we have this thought about, we think about where we come from and where we return to, it is just soul, right? There's no body there. So then when we know the truest parts of ourselves, when we're connected to our soul, then... we have certainty in everything, no matter what happens, right? This guy was rude, or they thought bad about me, or they spoke bad about me, my reputation's ruined, whatever it is, none of it really matters, right? And I often quote this movie, Evan Almighty, where it's Morgan Freeman. Does he play?
Is he the voice of God?
Morgan Freeman plays the voice of God, and Steve Carell plays a modern day Noah. And he's complaining to God and all these different things. And Morgan Freeman, God says, you know, do you think that if someone prays for patience, you think God gives them patience or he gives them opportunities to be patient? If he prayed for courage, does God give him courage or does he give him opportunities to be courageous? if someone prayed for the family to be closer, do you think God zaps and makes them feel warm and fuzzy, or does he give them opportunities to love each other more? And I think what I love about that is just like, okay, you can't deny that. But really, if we looked at everything and every moment of life, the difficult parts, and we kind of said, okay, this is the opportunity of my becoming, right, of connecting to my soul's purpose, then I think that that's so that I guess that's what I do instead of the death of envisioning is more along with
so our listeners can choose one
which one
thoughts.
Works for you. Yeah, but then you're just not into that illusion
right.
anymore.
And I think there's another deeper element here, if I can share, that it's related to something we said before. We've shared in previous podcasts, and it's a very, I think, important truth to know that the creator, the universe, is speaking to us all the time. I was actually having a conversation with a friend last night. He was in Saudi Arabia, and it was 4 o'clock in the morning. He had locked himself out the balcony of his room.
We didn't talk about this yet.
No? Okay. Anyway, so he called me, as he often does when he has nobody else to talk to. And he was sharing that, you know, this idea, right, that he literally hears God talk to him all the time. And the funny thing is, it was like 4:45 a.m. in Saudi when he called me, and the call, you know, the Muslim call to prayer was going off. And so here, God's talking to me again, right? Allahu Akbar. But this is the idea, right? So we know spiritually, it's a spiritual law that the universe is talking to us all the time. So there, in reality, every question that we have, every direction that we need, every support that we need is always being given to us. But why don't we hear it? Mm. Right? And at a deep level, you can't be listening to one voice. Can you imagine if we're having a conversation and you're trying to listen to two conversations at the same time? It can't work. You can listen to one. This is human nature. This is the spiritual and physical reality for each one of us. We can listen to one voice at any given time. And if you're listening to the voice of others, which means everything we spoke about until now, caring what people think about me and so on and so forth, you can't be hearing the voice of God. Mm-hmm. You can't be hearing the Creator talk to you. So therefore, there's in the prophets, there's this teaching about you have to give something away to get something. There's never, I'll take this and that, or I'll listen to this voice and that voice. And if you understand that, wouldn't you want to be hearing the voice of the Creator all the time?
Well, a lot of people lie to themselves and think they can listen to both voices. You can't even hear your own voice, by the way. The only voice, if you have decided it's external, it's only external. There's no middle ground here.
And that what you said now is so important, because, you know, often we talk about the Creator, God outside, but the reality is that my soul is telling me all the truth all the time.
Which is connected to your source, to
exactly.
God. Right. So they're one and the same in that way.
But you can't hear
you
it.
You can't hear it. I always say the louder other people's voices are, yours becomes inaudible.
So,
literally not.
So if we can add again a second fear that we'd like to awaken within ourselves and within our listeners, is if you know, if you accept that there is this voice of your soul talking to you all the time, never a doubt, never a lack. But while and to the degree that you're concerned about the voices of others, you just simply cannot hear. And I would add to that, which is important, is that your soul's voice is a whisper. And so there, any other voice you're listening to is going to override it. You're not even going to hear it. You're not even going to believe that it, or know that it's talking to you.
Well, here's the beauty. It's a whisper. But then when you mute the other voices...
Oh,
then that whisper becomes the only voice you hear.
It's, right.
And therefore it is the loudest.
Right. And I've shared this before, but it's one of my favorite sections in the prophets. And in Ezekiel, there's a process, and we know that, again, without going into details, the way we can spiritually read the Torah, the Bible, and the prophets is as a personal message from each one of us individually in our spiritual development. So there's a discussion of how does God become revealed, or the light to the Creator become revealed to the individual. And it goes through a few options. You know, there's a great wind, there's a great noise, but no, God is not revealed through the great wind. God is not revealed through the great noise. And then there's a silent whisper. And that is where and when the light of the Creator is revealed. And what I'm saying to every one of our listeners, right now, your soul is giving you all that you need, but you're probably not able to hear it, because that whisper is being drowned out by your listening to and hearing all these other loud voices that are happening outside of you.
It's funny. I just realized now in this moment why exercise has always been meditation for me. Like when I get the clearest thoughts, most people are like, oh, how do you meditate? It's a question I get often if I'm interviewed or speaking to people, and the people expect me to say like, oh, you know, I'm like sweating, you know, exercising. And I realized like when I'd be like deep in a run after I ran off all the noise, right? Whether it was external noise that I was still holding on to, thoughts people said, whatever words people said about me, or even now when I work out, by the end, when I push my body physically, I've now removed all of that noise and it becomes very silent. And then now I don't have to do it as much. Before, I used to have to like run for hours and hours, but now it's something I've practiced, but it's true. It's there. And it's just really getting rid of the, as people call it, the monkey brain, you know, all that noise that clutters everything else.
There's a biblical story. Abraham had a Hagar, the daughter of Ishmael, who was the mother of one of his children, the mother of
like a
Ishmael.
Second wife.
Sorry?
So a second wife.
Yes. A second wife. Before he had any children with his wife, Sarah, he had a son with Hagar. His name was Ishmael, who, by the way, is the great-great-grandfather and of the lineage of the Arab world. So she sent away into the desert, and the child, Ishmael, is thirsty for water. And she calls out to God, and she says, show me, you know what, my child is going to die. And it says that the Creator opened up her eyes, and she saw a wellspring right in front of her. Mm. And she took water from the spring, and she gave to her son to drink. And the Kabbalists teach something very important, which is, again, is a fundamental and beautiful and powerful teaching. And that is that everything that we need is in front of us all the time. But while we are looking at other things, which are not important, which are external, we can't see the true things, the important things that are right in front of us all the time. So not only do we not hear the voices of our soul, we also don't get the fulfillment and the assistance that we need is right in front of us. We're too involved in looking outside. We're too involved in listening outside that we miss, we will miss, we do miss, and we will miss if we don't really do the difficult work of changing this nature of ours, to hear the whisper of our soul, to see the great blessings and light right in front of us all the time.
Reminds me of that experiment they did where there was a big projection on a screen and the audience was asked to find like how many, whatever the exercise was, how many letters are missing and the things. So they're so focused on solving the question at hand that nobody noticed a man in a gorilla costume run across the stage and clap his hands. Like nobody saw, because it was right. And I've seen the footage, right? I've seen the video, and they're so busy trying to just focus on that one thing that they were told was important and necessary that they didn't see what was really literally right in front of them. But we do that all the time.
Right, absolutely.
But we don't think we do it. We're not at all blind to.
And as you said before, and it robs us of so much, so much.
I see so many people in pain and they feel stuck or paralyzed and they can't really achieve what they want. So the question is, you know, what is freedom really, right? It's something people pursue. They never quite get there. Some people might think freedom is being free from an illness or a money struggle or, you know, a problem, free from a problem that exists. But true freedom is non-attachment, not caring about anything external. That's when you feel most free, because you have the liberty just to be. It becomes about becoming. And there's a really inspiring story, which I've told you before, but Hurricane Carter, Reuben Hurricane Carter, he was a boxer and
famous Bob Dylan song.
Yes, that's true too. So he was at the height of his boxing career in the mid 1960s, and he was wrongly accused of a horrific crime that he did not commit. It was a triple homicide. So imagine, especially at that time, right? There was a biased, bogus verdict, and he got 3 life sentences. So it says that he reported to prison in an expensive tailored suit, a $5,000 diamond ring, and a gold watch. And while he was waiting in line to be entered into general inmate population, he asked to speak to someone in charge. I just love everything about this story for many reasons. So he looks the warden in the eye and he proceeds to tell him and the guards that were listening that he was not giving up on anything and that he controlled himself, that this was basically his remarkable declaration. He said, "I know you had nothing to do with injustice that brought me here to this jail. So I'm willing to stay here until I get out, but I will not under any circumstances be treated like a prisoner because I am not and never will be powerless." And it goes on and on. Basically, while he was there, he didn't dress in the uniform. He refused to do anything that an inmate would do. He was responsible for his own attitude, his beliefs, his choices, and he maintained that the entire time. He didn't eat the prison food. He didn't attend parole hearings. He didn't accept visitors. I mean, like, really crazy to the extent that he went to. And nobody would lay a hand on him also, because then they would get beaten up, right? He was a boxer. So all of this had a purpose, because all of his energy was instead, and as you were saying earlier, was spent on reading law books, philosophy books, and history books. And he said they had just put him somewhere he didn't deserve to be, but he did not intend to stay. So it took 19 years and two trials until he was finally free. And when he got out, he didn't ask for retribution. He didn't ask for money. He didn't ask for anything. He said, because nobody took anything from me. So I don't need an apology, because nobody, I'm still the same person, and I'm leaving here innocent. I came in innocent. And I think that's a strong example of not being attached to, I mean, anything external, not even his reality, right? Because he created his own.
Beautiful, beautiful. So I think what we're...
So basically, your mind remains your own no matter what. And this is an extreme example.
Right.
But, you know, it's a choice. As Marcus Aurelius said, choose not to be harmed and you won't feel harmed. Don't feel harmed and you haven't been.
Beautiful. And like I said in the beginning, I think for our listeners, you know, often we share wisdom, and it's enough, and maybe I would say it's enough, but, you know, people to be inspired by it in the moment. What we're really asking our listeners on today's podcast is to dedicate your life to this work of caring less and less every single day of what others think of you, because otherwise you're stealing so much from yourself.
Well, you're just going to live the life you didn't come here to live, really. It's somebody else's version of a life.
Right. So, but there's two parts of it. One is it's not as happy as you can be, right? But maybe more important,
well, you're shackled,
it's also not
right?
as fulfilling and manifesting your potential as you should be.
As it's meant to be.
Right. Yeah. So I was going to share, there's actually an interesting letter, but I'll share it next time.
Oh, well.
Because it's a question, and I want to get into a conversation with you.
All right.
But I want to remind our listeners, we read the letters that you send to Monica
eventually.
Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. So please continue to send your letters, because, by the way, even if you don't read them on the air, we do read them and are inspired by them. But certainly those that we do read and we share with our listeners, it inspires them. So you have the opportunity to share.
And they often inspire interesting conversations that we have that inspire us to do other
absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely. So continue to send your stories, inspirations, questions, topic ideas to Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. As always, make sure you share this podcast with everybody you know. Go to Apple Podcasts, write 5-star reviews. And as always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast as much as we enjoyed recording it.
Stay spiritually hungry.